Net Podcast.
Third Degree the Podcast is brought to you by our wonderful listeners who support us on Patreon. Patreon.com/thirddegree. If you like what we do on the web, you like what we do on this podcast, let's be honest, if you're here listening when FC Dallas didn't even have a game, then you're our audience. You're the people that make this thing work. And without you guys, this podcast and this website probably wouldn't even exist. So thank you for your support. Why not join us at patreon.com and enjoy the show?
Well, hello there, DFW soccer curious person. You welcome to another episode of Third Degree, the podcast. There's Dan Crook. Howdy, Dan.
Hello.
And your hero, my hero, everybody's hero, and the original soccer influencer himself, Mr. ThirdDegree.net, Buzz Carrot. Come in, Buzz.
Hey, fellas, I'm super excited. It wasn't 102 yesterday and today. And
the weather today and tomorrow was marvelous. Although this is so fake good. Fall, you do realize that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's Indian summer, but yeah. No,
we call it fake fall here in Dallas, oh, Buzz.
Same thing.
It'll be 100 degrees before the end of the week before we get...
Will it really? Real,
it's supposed to be like 96 or something before the end of the week. Yeah. No bueno. No bueno. All right.
I don't like that at all. Oh my God, 93.
It's going to be a bitch for sure. Okay, well, I hope you guys are good. Let's dive into the stuff. Got lots to get to today, including Atletico, North Texas, Texoma, of course, Trinity. And we'll start with the good old-fashioned burn talk. They wore the burn shirts this weekend up in St. Louis.
Yeah.
They do look great, by the way.
Oh, my gosh, they're so good.
But in this godforsaken season that it is, we had a very weird... I don't even know how to explain this game. And I'm really torn over the idea. I can't figure out if it's really cool or really awful that you finally have an MLS player of the week on your team and he's your emergency third backup keeper. Like, I can't figure out if that's cool or really embarrassing.
I was at the North Texas game, and one of the updates from FC Dallas on Twitter was sub 19 minutes, Jackson in for Kaik, and I thought, boy, that can't be good. Something really went sideways.
Okay. Before you go any further, yeah. The honest engine here, when they had Jackson, did you ask yourself a question of who they were talking about, or did you know that was the backup goalkeeper?
No, I knew that was the third keeper. Yeah, Jacob Jackson. Okay.
I had no idea who that was when I saw that.
I can tell you who North Texas's third keeper is.
I know you can, Buzz. You can tell me who the third keeper for the U13s are. I know it was a stupid
not the
question.
The 13s might be a little hard. But
did you know who it was, Dan?
Jacob Jackson?
When they sent out the tweet that just said Jackson for Kaik, did you know who they were referring to?
I didn't see the tweet. I was indisposed, unfortunately.
No, that's fine. I was just,
I saw it like an hour later, and I was like, the only Jackson I know would be Jacob Jackson, which doesn't make any sense. Did they sign someone else?
I mean, here's the thing, Buzz. I know they had signed another keeper several weeks ago.
Right.
But you could have held a gun to my head and threatened my family, and I could have never told you the dude's name.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's okay. That's his name.
That's unbelievable. What a turn of events.
Yeah, certainly not the kind of thing that you would want. And obviously, I thought about it for 3 or 4 seconds, and I thought, well, I know what that means. That means Clody's out. So, like, either a red card or he got annihilated. Well, that can't be the case, because if he just got annihilated, he would be subbing for Jackson, was subbing in for Clody. So the fact that they had to sub him in for a field player meant, in my head, automatically, like, oh, that's a red card. That's not good. So I was like, here we go. And then, you know, the reactions on Twitter were, even when the funny part was, even when FC Dallas scored, they were like, oh, against the run of play, you know, it's like, so I could tell that it wasn't going well. But, you know, it's hard to get to an FC Dallas game for me watching it without knowing what's going to happen in the game when I'm watching it later. So it wasn't a big surprise by that point, because everyone always spoils it for me, which is fine. It's the nature of the beast. So, the foul itself, I can't complain. I mean, obviously, Klaus, you know, makes a meal of it, And Clody doesn't actually like tackle him or physically hit him, but he does trip over Clody. So
yeah, it's
like,
a foul.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's a foul for sure. And, you know, maybe you have an appeal argument on Dallas's behalf that the ball was too far away, so it shouldn't be the red card, but it's a foul. So
it's a dog so all day long. Anybody complaining about that being a red card dog so doesn't understand the laws of the dog so.
I mean, I think that they'll probably appeal. I mean, I'm sure they appeal all red cards, but I'm sure they'll appeal it on that ground, like, and try and claim that the ball was too far away for it to be a dog so at that point. But, you know, despite the fact that you really hate it and feel really bad for Clody, I mean, he definitely tripped him. So, you know, it is what it is. And in this era with VAR looking at stuff, I'm like, I almost never really have grounds to complain, because, like, you get multiple chances to review it and they still think that's what it is. Then it's like, okay, it's what it is.
It kind of feels like one of those ones, if it was an outfield player that did it, then the donkey touch, you know, 15 yards away from him comes into play. But the keeper rushing 18 yards out adds that layer.
Well, and there's nobody, I mean, yes, the ball gets away from him, but it's not like he wouldn't have caught up to the ball and just tapped it in from a few yards, you know, from 7 yards wide or whatever, you know?
I agree with you, but I'm sure that'll be the grounds they'll try and take, is hopefully get lucky, you know, on the committee. But
I just feel like we should be aiming all of our pitchforks and torches at Lalas Abubakar, because that was just, that was, I mean, everybody knew what we were getting when they signed the guy, which is brain fart. He's just good for a brain fart on a regular, semi-regular basis. And there's one of them right there.
I'll go even further. I'll blame that one on Quill.
For playing Abubakar in that position?
Yeah. Because Quill has raved multiple times about Urguide in the middle and how hugely, massively important it is and how they've got to have that guy in the middle. And then he puts him on the left and puts Abubakar in the middle. It's like, what are you doing? It's like, I'm sure there was some thought that, like, he could cover Klaus better from over there or something. I mean, I don't even know. I was like, you're just overthinking it, man. Maybe it's because of Bernie. I don't know. You know, your best center back wasn't in the middle where he can sit deeper and read the game and attack the game. You know, Urguide is not making that mistake. That doesn't happen. If you put Urguide where he belongs, that doesn't happen. Play the game with 11-11.
That's a fair thing, but at the very least, you would anticipate that somebody with Lalas Abubakar's experience wouldn't allow himself to get in that situation.
Well, you just said the guy's good for a gaff a game.
I know. But
so why would you think that he wouldn't give you a gaff a game?
All right. Fair point.
You know, I mean, listen, he's better than Ibby. That's fine. You know, but, like, just put your best guy in the best spot, you know?
Okay. So the rest of the game is essentially, I mean, well, then, of course, before we move on, somehow Dallas manages to point out, to remind everybody that St. Louis is actually a really, really bad soccer team. And within a few minutes, squares the game as Musa very violently shoves the ball in the upper near corner on the keeper.
Yeah, high press.
And the game's one-on-one, yeah.
Yeah, Patterson Delgado, of all people, pinches on Durkin, who's got donkey touch, you know, and gets the ball off of him. And Kappas is right there, gets a little recovery and feeds Musa on the break. And that is a very difficult angle. The Musa's finish there is class. I mean, that to roof that thing right over the keeper as he's getting closed down from that sharp angle, that's just a really nice goal. You know, when you're down a man and you're trying to manufacture a goal, you know, you get a chance to press high, even if it's just counter press, even if you're not like doing a full load press, you just, you know, the ball goes out of play, you're going to stay up there really quick. And then if it doesn't come off, then you drop, you know, took advantage. I ID'd the guy that was going to, the ball was going to bounce 4 yards away. Sure enough, it did. So
the rest of the game is essentially Dallas. Well, first off, the story of the game is Jacob Jackson just playing out of his mind, and he's having one of those games that typically Dallas ends up suffering from, which is the opposing goalkeeper just having a heater.
Yeah.
And obviously the irony of this is a guy nobody knew who he was. He was a backup keeper. I don't even know what Jacob's story is, Buzz. You may know more about him. You can tell people. But I just, you know, this game kind of goes into this state where St. Louis has free reign on just taking shots. What did they end up with? 46 shots?
43 was what I saw, but whatever. It's over 40. That's
it's over, which is, I mean, when was the last time we saw an MLS team with over 40 shots in a game? Has Dallas ever had 40 shots in a game in 30 years?
Man, I don't even know.
I don't think so.
I didn't think to look that one up.
I don't. I mean, it's possible, and I'm sure somebody, Garrett or somebody on the media team, may hear this and point out what it is. Point being is what I'm curious about is the decision to take Kaik off instead of one of the attacking players. Were you surprised by that decision?
No, because he wants to keep Ramiro on. You know, and if you're going to get anything out of the game, you do need a few people that can get forward a little bit, you know, and Kaik's not really going to be a wide player for you. You know, the other option would have been take Ramiro off, but Ramiro, in my mind, but Ramiro's the leader, the veteran, you know, you needed him in there. And I thought he played really well, all things considered. The temperature was a little cooler, so he moved better than I've ever seen him move in. You know, Kaik's the 19-year-old, 20-year-old, whatever he is, not going to make great decisions necessarily. So I thought that was pretty obvious.
Not Julio.
Would I say Julio?
No. You said Ramiro. I'm just saying, why wouldn't you take Julio off and just kind of like help solidify the defense?
Well, because Julio is the one player you have that can play over the top and break away like by himself, you know.
So not right. Musa and leave Julio up top?
No. Well, Moose is the guy that can post up and relieve pressure. So when you get out, you need him out there, right? And then Delgado is the one guy who can take up a wide position, which he did, but also, you know, can make a breaking pass, because Ramiro's not really going to be a great breaking passer if he recovers the ball, you know, and Kaik's not either. Kaik's not a great breaking passer either. Kappas could do it a little bit. So I think it was pretty obvious that was going to be the choice. You know,
I'd surprised by that, because obviously it didn't work, because they ended up just having to absorb and absorb and absorb. And none of the getting out really took place.
No, but you try. I mean, I don't know that Kaik would have helped you that much. You know, when you're going into a 4-4-1 basically, and you're going to low block it and compress it way down. You know, what's the difference? You know, Julio and Delgado are going to be in the really wide spaces anyway. So you're putting Ramiro and Kappas in there in front of the center backs. You know, you could have gone another way. It would have been okay, I guess. But, you know, it did work. I mean, they pressed and got work and got it, you know. And they had a few other chances. Not a ton, but they had a few other chances. And, you know, they brought in some fresh legs later. So I'm not surprised.
Nothing really to take away from it, though.
From the Kaik sub?
No. From the game in general.
Well, just Jackson, really. Because at that point, like, they had so little possession. Chris Kappas had a pretty good game again. You know, like within five games now, for me, he's their best midfielder. He had a bunch of, he had like something like seven progressive passes, and that's in a game they bunkered the whole game. So, like, you know, the commentators on the broadcast told a story about Quill saying that he was like a son to him. And I was like, man, that guy's never coming out of the lineup. that's really the only takeaways, you know, other than Jackson being. You know, they added a save for him after in the game. He had 11, and even a couple hours after the game, he had 11. But today they made it 12. The league did. Mm-hmm. So he ties Mark Dodd for the singles game record, which was against Kansas City in 1998. And combined, him and Clody combined 14 breaks the club's record, which was obviously 12 for a single game as a team. You know, anyway, it was just Jacob Jackson. He's kicked around MLS Next Pro basically for, I don't know, three or four seasons, really. I mean, he played for Monarchs in like 2028, but that was before he went to college. He played a little in Marymount, and then he's been with the Revolution 2, and he's been with Earthquakes 2, basically. He's had, you know, a cup of coffee in the league and played three games in MLS before, you know, with San Jose. But the fact that they gave him up for basically nothing shows you that he wasn't like highly valued, but he's done some really strong performances in Next Pro. And obviously now this will get some attention. So, like, you know, it's possible. Like, unfortunately he's out of contract. So Dallas, if they want to try and keep him, will have to try and do something with him this winter if they want to keep him as a third guy. And I don't know why you wouldn't, because their next guy that could be their third keeper is kind of far away in the, you know, in North Texas. So, you know, it'd probably be a good 2 or 3 year plug to go ahead and sign him for a longer term. But then also, you know, you might have some offers for the guy. Like, people will see that performance on tape and they'll be like, oh, you know what? We can make that guy our two or even our one, maybe, you know, take a look at him. So he might be a tradable, sellable asset. At the same time, like, getting him to re-sign as a third now might be difficult, because now his agents right now out there, I'm sure, making phone calls trying to find him at least a two, if not a one spot in the league based on that performance. What I could do is send him a leak of that link of the tape, you know, here's the highlights. So it might be tough to keep him at this point.
What was your favorite save?
There, I don't remember exactly who was on, but there was a really quick, close in tight one where he got down really, that's one of the hardest things to save often for keepers, especially
the side volley. Or the ball came in, got chipped into the middle, and the guy kind of just turned and
volleyed it. Yeah, it was from a close range. He was about 6 or 7 yards away,
yeah.
And it was crisp, and it was to Jackson's right, I believe, yep. If my memory serves. Got down and quick reaction save and got it. And that's probably the one that was the most impressive to me. There was one from range that was really nice, too. The long one from their right side going across. Not the one that was the goal. There was another one. That was also nice. But the one where he got low was the one that impressed me the most. That was a really nice reaction save. Really impressive.
It's a remarkable story to be in that situation and pull that kind of game out of your butt. That's it's tremendous. Like I said, otherwise you're playing a really bad team, which is actually lower than you in the standings, and you end up with another draw, which I guess considering the situation is good, but this is going to kill Kit Quill and these guys if they just keep drawing games. I mean, this is not working for them. This is their third straight draw, by the way.
Well, it might even be good for him that he didn't have to think about it. Like, he didn't know he was going to play, and so he just didn't have time to get worried or get nervous. Yeah. But you're right.
I guess we'll find out next week, right?
Yeah. they're going to tie themselves out of the playoffs. As Dan said, like, you know, you can kill yourself with ties. And Quill beforehand said, this is a game we have to win. We got to go in and win it. Well, they didn't win it. I know that you want to feel good, like, you know, his post-game quote about, it feels like a win. Man, it doesn't matter. What matters is, like, only thing that matters is playoffs, right? That's this team, right? Playoffs is the minimum. And you're not going to tie yourself into the playoffs. You now have to win 4 of 6 to get in, probably, you know. I mean, or maybe 3 and 2 or 3 ties, I suppose. But you really got to win 4 out of your next 6 games if you're going to get in. And that's because, like, there was Doyle today was like, oh, if they win this weekend, there'll be 1 point out. What, that doesn't matter. What matters is that with 6 games left, everyone else is going to keep getting results. And so you have to keep getting results. And it's not that you'll be 1 point out. It's that you're like, you're almost always going to have to get to 42, if not more. And there are 3 or 4 teams around you and in between you and that status. So you have to outplay 3 or 4 or 5 teams to get that last spot. And so that's why it's going to have to take 4 of 6, win 4 of 6. And that's going to be almost impossible.
Dan, is it almost better in some ways if this team doesn't make the playoffs?
Yes, 100%, because it forces the conversation of there are holes in the team that need addressing. That is, you know, it is a rebuild. It post Lucho, it's gone back to that kind of rebuild state. It's not the, you know, they get to the playoffs, you know how they treat the playoffs. You can get in on the play-in game, and that's as good as finishing first in the league. If you're in the lottery, then you might as well have won it. If they miss out on that lottery, then they've got work to do. They're not going to stand still. Well, they shouldn't. They have no excuse to stand still. Zanata cannot point to the team and said, well, I constructed a league-challenging roster in one window. Because he hasn't. He had a very good first window, in the early part at least. Big work in progress.
Yeah, that was my other thing. That's the other thing Doyle brought up today was his observation that this is a roster filled with more who's that guy since the old Chivas team. And I thought, yeah, that's pretty spot on, actually.
Yeah, that comes back to the expression I have that I say it's like just a bunch of dudes, you know.
It is,
like,
yes,
yeah. I mean, other than Musa, it's got, like, there are some names in there that at one point were much more highly thought of, but they're now 32, 33, you know, and they have guys that were everybody else's, you know, guy they were willing to part with. You know, Ibiaga's a guy LAFC was willing to part with. Moore's a guy that Nashville was willing to part with. You know, little Jets. 33. Ramiro's a guy who was done at Grêmio. Kayik's a guy that was Grêmio couldn't get within 5 dudes of the lineup. You know, like, every piece is like, even like Urguide, like, right, French second division, right? It's not a marquee. Like, so that's what Doyle's talking about. It's not a bunch of dudes that you've heard of or you know their names. And even Petr Musa was like third choice at Benfica. Now he's worked out. It's been fantastic. Don't get me wrong. some of the pieces are great. Your Gide is great, but I know what he means that like, if you're not a avid FC Dallas follower, you know, you tune in and you go, man, I don't know who any of these guys are. Like, people aren't going to know who Kappas is. Like, well, I do, cause I'm a sicko. Right. But like, he did have a couple of national team caps, you know, or training camps or whatever they were. So like, if you're a real national team meathead, you might know who Kappas is, but like, no one else is going to know who that guy is, you know? So it's, you know, if you're a Rapids fan, you know who Abubakar is, but that's about it really. So I know what he means.
There's a funny joke in there about with the Dallas roster, you could play a game of soccer player or HEB employee. I don't know.
Yeah, for the average fan, that's definitely true. I mean, for the hardcore, it's not, but for the average fan, it would be.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
Know, even Petr Musa, like for an average sort of normal soccer fan, would not know who he is.
No, no.
You know,
who's the most famous guy on this? Who's the most famous player in the on the Dallas roster? And I don't mean sickos, the curious. I'm talking about just like regular average soccer fan who watches Premier League on Saturday and maybe a little MLS here and there.
Legit, easy.
Yeah, I would say Orshak Moore. You know, been around the national team a fair bit. Legit, I think, is the answer. Certainly with the Becky G value there, fan value.
Yeah,
and if you're talking about a worldwide fan, it might actually be Ramiro. You know, he's won some Copa Libertadores. You know, it's, so it's not a European fan, but...
The obvious answer is Enes Sali.
Huge. Bigly.
Yeah. Absolute.
Massive. What happened to that dude since he's come back?
Played one game for North Texas. That's it. He was on the bench for this one, though, because they ran out of people.
And what happened when he played for North Texas?
Nothing. He ran around a bit and walked around a bit.
What an absolute bust.
Yeah.
What was the worst purchase? An Enes Sali or Lucho Acosta?
Well, Lucho Acosta because of the money.
And because what Sali cost him, what, $3 million?
No. No, he was more like $1.5 million.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Lucho because of the money and because of the locker room. I mean, Enes Sali doesn't do anything to the locker room. He just sucks, right? Lucho wrecked the locker room or tried to.
Yeah, but at least you got a little bit of something out of Lucho for the money. You got a little media coverage and you got a few goals and you got a goal and an assist or something. Yeah,
yeah. The money he cost and the negative impact is Lucho. Enes Sali is not nearly as much money and has no impact. So that's negative or positive. Might as well not even be here.
It just caused a lot of rumors of shadiness around your technical director.
Oh, well, I mean, a lot of the signings this team does are like that because no one's ever heard of the guys. And you're like, what is this deal? Then why is this money going to like, yeah. I mean, Cake, same way. It took me a while to find somebody that knew why his price was so high, you know.
I mean, you know, it's the two different types of transfer. And, you know, Lucho Acosta, former MVP, it's like, okay, great. Yeah, if he's available, give it a try. Try and be ambitious. We've all complained for the last God knows how many years that they're not. And then there's Sali. Who is this guy and why are you spending money on him?
Yeah, yeah. Buzz, I think there's an argument that Enes Sali's the worst of the two purchases.
Nope.
No? Okay.
No.
They're like two different kinds of worst.
Neither one is good. I mean, Enes Sali is just a flyer. It's a coin flip. You're just making a bet. I mean, the Lucho one is the one that's...
If he was like Ahmet Kosha and it was just, he's out of contract, he costs nothing, then don't care. He's just a body.
Interesting. All right. Well, Dallas has Austin up next. Hip, hip, hooray.
Yeah.
And I would assume that means they're here, by the way. And I should also point out that they also have only lost once in their last seven games like Dallas, but they've won four of those seven games. So they're on a bit of their own little run right now. Nico Esteves is.
Yeah. Have they actually clinched or not? I can't remember.
I don't think so. No.
They may have clinched.
Mm. Classic. Let's see. Where are they?
All you Nico Esteves haters out there.
Well, they're on 41 points. So if the number's 42, they're pretty much in. So that's, you know, that they're going to make it almost assuredly. They're not officially locked in, but yeah. But the real question is, you know, are they still going to be up for it? Are they still going to be like trying to play in peak form?
Who, Dallas or Austin?
No, Austin. Like, which Austin are you going to get? I know it's a rivalry game, so probably you get an intense one.
They've also got a shot at a home game.
Yeah, good point.
They can't just sit on it and go, okay, yeah, great, we can get seventh. Fourth is, 3 points out for them right now. Granted, Seattle has a game in hand, but, they're still fighting for it.
Yeah.
So other than the change at keeper, do you anticipate any other formation or player changes? Probably not formation change. Player not changes a formation for the change, game?
No. Yeah, formation change will be the rest of this year, the way it is. I don't think so. Other than Irigide, better be back in the middle. That's a no-brainer, right? I suppose with Ubakar's gaff, maybe he might put Ibi back in and shift, for him or for Shaq Moore and shift Shaq Moore out wide. The reason I think he's not shifting Shaq Moore out wide because when he puts Shaq Moore at that right center back spot, then he can have Ramiro and Kaique both on because Ramiro can play that wide wing back spot, even though he's not really much of a wing back, but he's an important player to have on there. So if you continue to do that, you continue to have, more grit and tenacity in midfield and Kaique. So I kind of won't be surprised if that trick sticks, if they don't stick with Shaq Moore. And then it comes down to whether you think Ibiaga deserves a game or maybe he needed a rest and now he'll come back in and Bubakar will sit or something like that. But otherwise, nothing will change. Bernie, Kappas.
Yeah.
Musa. Delgado did not have a very good game, but Quill seems to really like, whether you want to call it a 3-5-2 and consider Delgado the 10, or whether you want to think of him as a false wing or whatever you want to, however you want to draw it up, modern tactics are fluid and all that. He kind of wants that 10-ish more capable guy. And so really at this point, it's Anderson Julio versus Logan Farrington for the other wing spot, and even though Logan had scored, he dropped him for Anderson Julio, which I think either says how much Quill values Anderson Julio or how much he doesn't value Logan Farrington, particularly as a wing. I know he values Farrington, but he doesn't necessarily value him as a wing, even though I think he's played so well there that he deserves to keep playing. But it won't shock me if he sort of just shifted back to this Logan sub role and Anderson Julio keeps playing. So.
All right. Saturday, 7:30. Broccoli comes to town with Nico Esteves. And before we go on that, just the other note, Jacob Jackson's 12 saves ties the record, the club record for saves in a game with the great Mark Dodd, who back in 1998 did that against the Kansas City Whiz. Yeah. Yes, that was back in the day they were called the Whiz Kids.
Were they still the Whiz in 98?
Yeah, they were the Whiz, I think, until 99.
Yeah, it's right around
I believe.
Then.
I
thought the email that came out said 96.
Well, 96 they were the Whiz, 97 they were the Whiz. The first two seasons, I can't remember. Maybe it was 98 they switched to Wizards.
No, I mean the email from FC Dallas with the game notes. I thought it said that the record was in 96.
I'm pretty sure it was 98, but I will look real quick.
Oh, Dan is debating the date of the saves. I was going back and forth.
You were still talking about the logo.
The Whiz.
That'll always be the Whiz.
September 19th, 1988 at Kansas City.
Yeah.
A 1-0 win, by the way, with Mark Dodd's 12 saves.
Whiz with 1-Z, too, by the way, kids.
By the way, the record for shots faced is Matt Jordan with 15, so that must be shots on target and not shots overall.
if you want a real laugh, FB Ref has him saving 13.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they had him at 12, I think. Well, I think that 13 probably was the Collodi and him combined, maybe. I don't know.
No, it's 15 combined.
All right. So everybody enjoy broccoli this weekend. Let's move on to other things. Trinity are undefeated 3 games into the season. They win 1-0 on the road at my other second home, Jacksonville, Florida. And they end up getting a 1-0 win on the road, as I said, and now they're 3-0, top of the table. And it was funny because let me go to the big story of the game. Rhea Moore, who did she start the game?
No, subbed in.
Okay, so she subbed in.
Yep.
And what is the record she set in this buzz?
She is the youngest goal scorer in any women's professional game in the United States.
at the age of 15.
Yeah, 15 and some 300 something days, whatever it is. So, and so that includes
almost 16.
Yeah, almost 16. But still, you know, it's not just Super League. It's NWSL too. So, and probably I hope that they went back and checked like the W League or the WUSA, like the other pro leagues that existed after the 98 World Cup. For them to have said that, they better have checked like all those sports, all those leagues, because the NWSL is not it. You know, it's not the only one. There's been a couple of them. So, but regardless, amazing achievement. She was the player, like when I asked Petrocelli right for the season, like who has really like surprised you in camp and really been like, oh my gosh, I got way more than I bargained for. He singled her out. He said she's really fast and is a game breaking player. You know, obviously they're going to bring her along slow like they did Celie Strawn. They're not going to throw her out there. She only started because not started. She was only really in the mix because Ibagagu was not available and didn't play. So like Celie Strawn started at left wing and then Moore came in later, you know, when she might not have gotten off the bench ordinarily, but still what a great moment. You know, a bad pass out of the back. She intercepted, took a touch and scored. So really good shot.
What's her club background?
She's from California. I want to say San Diego. I didn't pay that much attention. She's from California. And so she just came here to be here and play with Trinity basically. As a teenager, you know, she's not paid. She's an academy player. So she's still a teenager, still in school, you know? But you know, what a shot by her. And Dallas, really handled, Jacksonville Sporting Jacks, who is pretty decent club. By the way, Trinity is the only team with more than one win and they have three. So they're off to a hot start, but their keeper was really good. Jacksonville's was, and, Trinity controlled most of the game, and their team is so balanced and so well built. You know, they have backup pieces in every spot. They have a couple of pieces they can use that can shift the way they play. Just guys that have a primary spot, but also can back somebody up else in some other spot. So just really well, really nice roster construction. They can give you a change of paces, different spots. Really good. For me, we've talked a little bit about Bellotta this season, who's been filling in kind of for Missimo a bit. I thought this was her worst game. She was a little sloppy with the ball, made multiple bad passes, but then they hashed because of, they were missing another piece. Because Abubago was missing. They had to bring Bellotta back more as an eight. Not that that's where Abubago plays, but the shifting around caused her to play her as deeper as an eight. And I don't think she was as comfortable back there. I think she's better when she's in that higher spot. So, but overall, really strong game. Get a road point. This is the first of their five on the road in the league that they have until November. So
until after the state fair.
Yeah, they do have the one state fair friendly game, which is a home game. It doesn't count, you know, but. And they have their open house coming up in September. If you're a Trinity fan, you should go and check out the stadium, the Reno. So,
did you happen to see the social media ad for the Classico they put up with the, they asked the local artist Dummy Fresh to do a game poster for it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's on the Dallas Trinity website. And it's cool. The game poster is really nice. The other thing that I've noticed is Dallas not only is leading the league at the top of the standings, they've allowed the least goals. They've only allowed one goal in their three games. The next closest team is three goals. I mean, almost every team in this league has allowed at least five goals already. So Dallas at one goal is a really good sign.
Yeah, they've rebuilt their defense this year with a couple of new pieces. And so far, it's worked out really well.
Yeah, done really well. It was surprising. I mean, and even on top of that, without Hannah Davison, who was such a huge piece in the back last year. Yeah, like you say, completely rebuilt goalkeeper, back four. It's looked really good.
The three teams they've beaten were Spokane, Brooklyn, and Jacksonville?
Yep.
Okay. So a fifth, sixth, and eighth place teams out of the nine teams. All right.
Well, part of that is because they're getting beat by Trinity, but Jacksonville was the best team of the three they've played. But take care of, they were good. Their defense is good. Their keeper's really good. So that was the most difficult matchup they've had so far. But, you know, beat who you're supposed to beat. So 3-0, you know, good start.
Excellent.
I mean, they've done really well to keep going this season. You know, Tampa, bottom of the league, 1 point. Spokane, who, you know, really had that late rally. Carolina Ascent, who were just phenomenal throughout the regular season last year. None of those three teams have a win. Brooklyn, great first half of last season.
The bottom fell out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they had some weird stuff happen off the field, which they seemingly recovered from.
And Trinity's doing all this without Allie Thornton scoring. The Golden Boot winner hadn't scored yet. So, like, you know, if they get her going, it's going to even
be. And no more. Lexi Missimo.
And no Missimo. Yeah. So, like,
and no head coach. Well, they've got a head coach. He just doesn't want to admit it yet.
He just doesn't want to admit it. Well, they actually named him officially head coach. So, but I still think that they're actively searching for another one.
He's going to, you know? If they keep playing like this, he will be the head coach when playoffs come.
I know.
Whether he likes it or not.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. So the second of the five game road stretch happens. This also back to Florida. They go to Fort Lauderdale, who are in second place, but they've only won one game so far this season.
Big test. Yeah. Second place team.
Yeah.
They've got a bit of a weird one this season because they did have Addie McCain, who was she was WPS. Actually, she was, her and Allie Thornton were on the WPSL FC Dallas team together. She moved to Lexington as part of their big offseason. So a little bit of a rebuild there. They've still got Bill Hamid's sister, Jasmine, in the midfield. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what comes of everything. Obviously, we've seen how Dallas has had its partial rebuild. It didn't really lose a lot of players to other teams, as has happened around the league with Tampa lost Riley Parker, who was a solo Sting. Sorry, she was a Sting kid. They lost her to Carolina. Addie McCain, obviously. There's been a good bit of movement around the league, and Dallas seems to be exempt from that as far as outgoings.
Nice start to the season. Good stuff. North Texas, Ventura County.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Home and away, which is weird.
That sounds like a weekly occurrence at this point.
Kind of was, yeah. Yeah, so they played a bunch of kids, which I love. Love seeing the kids. Like Sam Setta got his debut, which is, he's a 16-year-old kid, is one of the hot coming up. He's actually already signed. Real exciting young player. Anyway, they tied 1-1.
He's Aaron your top Essen. Prospect in the system, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, this closest to being at the top of the system. There's one or two kids further down the system that I think are right in the same neighborhood. But Sam is the most exciting, like, high-end ceiling of, like, the top two or three age groups.
And remind everybody what position he plays?
He's a nine or a wing. He came in at wing in this game, but he can nine also. He's Brazilian-American. Just
big kid, little kid, skinny kid.
No, just pretty normal. He's probably 5'10", you know, not short, not big, you know. Okay. He's probably not a nine long term. He's probably a wing. But if you ever get a chance to see him play, like with North Texas, if he gets in more games, you know, don't think like, what is he doing? Think like, what is he almost doing? Because like, he came in within 30 seconds, had two just blistering shots, you know, and just look at the quality of his touch and the way he can rip the ball. And you know, he's got a long way. If you look at some of the famous people talk about development, he's just now at that age where he's starting to learn how to play. Like, he knows, up to this point, it's all been touch and technique. And now he's 16. He's moving into like, okay, how do I actually play this game with men as a professional? So that's where he is, but exciting. But he played like, you know, 15, 20 minutes, but it's just exciting to see him get in the game. They tied 1-1 and they won in PKs. Aaron Essel, who's Gall's favorite player, who's ordinarily
over his own kid.
Second favorite. Sorry, my bad. Yeah. So he started as a 6'8" kind of thing. He doesn't do much for me in the middle. I think he's better or more interesting as a center back. I'm not sure he's ever going to be an MLS level player, but he is 20. So, you know, he's got a dominant mentality and he intimidates people. And I think that's why Gall, who likes intimidating players, likes him. But they shifted him up to play forward, like a second forward, like late in the game, trying to get a goal, and it worked. They were firing balls into him and to Chris Salazar, who's a tall goal poaching nine from the academy, and trying to get a goal, and they got one. They tied it up. They scored with like 2 or 3 minutes left, and they got the points in. They're currently in eighth, which is the last playoff spot, and they got 4 games left, so it's in their hands. They got Sporting KC. You know, so you just got to outplay the teams around you, and you're in. So they're in an okay position, but not in a great position. Just need to get a couple of results. And the veteran foreign guys that they have are almost all hurt or whatever, or not available. So they got a bunch of kids playing other than Essel. And then the 1-9 they've been using, Cigare, I think is how you say it. Anyway, he doesn't do much for me either, but I'd rather play the kids, honestly.
Texoma got it handed to them by Union Omaha. Boy. 5-0
Yeah. When they get a goal or two against them, they can really fall apart. I don't know what's going on with this team. They were super, super hot. I do wonder if the off-field stuff that's kind of bubbling around them is maybe getting to the players. You know, I don't really know.
They did lose two influential players to ACLs in the same game.
Did they? That's fair. But I think that that characteristic of falling apart when they get down a goal or two, particularly on the road, has been there for a while. Like, if they're in the game and it's one goal and they got a chance to tie it or win it, then they can stay in it. But if they get one or two, then they just sort of fall apart. And they've had a couple of games where they've gotten whooped pretty hard on the road in the last month and a half or so. So I just don't really know that they have necessarily what with the, especially with the guys that are hurt. Solomon Asante still hurt too. I just don't know if they're going to be able to pull it out because now they've fallen to 10th and they got the second place team on Saturday. So it's they got a tough road.
So I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
So they went to Nebraska, Omaha, to play this game. Their team is based in Sherman, Texas, which is 2-hour drive to DFW, 2.5-hour drive to DFW.
No.
Sherman to DFW airport?
It takes me 1 hour and 15 minutes from my house
to get to Sherman.
Yeah, to get to the stadium.
Oh, okay. I thought it was further than that. No, it seems like a haul. I guess my point is
it's a haul, but it ain't 1.5 hours.
I mean, to travel for this team is a bit like a whole thing because they're gonna go to. I don't know if this game against Spokane is here or there, but they obviously had to go to Spokane at least once this season. So to have to pack up and take your entire team all the way down to DFW airport from Sherman, Texas, and then travel all the way back, that just seems like a lot.
Yeah. I mean, when you're playing in what is equivalent to the bus leagues, you know, it's always travel's always going to be tough. You know, it's, I'm sure it's not easy when, you know, the closest, I mean, for all I know, no, that can't be right. I was going to say the closest airport might be Oklahoma City, but I don't think that's,
I don't know.
Right.
Maybe further away.
Yeah, I don't think it's a lot further away.
It's just something I hadn't thought about in the decision to place a pro sports team in Sherman, Texas, is the fact that a lot of the teams you're going to have to travel for aren't regional. They're, you know,
yeah,
they're going to require you to travel down to the nearest internet, you know, the nearest big airport, which is
it's 1 hour from their stadium to DFW airport.
Man, it seems like that would be further than that, but okay. That's crazy. All right. Well, best of luck to them. And I guess, you know, they'll be 10 minutes shorter when they move to whatever high school they're talking about moving to.
Well, that's not necessarily what's happening per se.
What's happening?
Well, that's the thing is like, it's officially a mystery. Texoma is adamant.
Do they even know what's happening?
I don't know. This is what I mean about the stuff circulating around the team. Texoma is adamant that they are not moving. The limited contact anyone's managed to have with this new USL One team that's coming to Salina, the people that have made contact are getting this is a new team answer. Now, the problem is twofold, is that the mailing addresses that were used for the new team are the same as the Texoma addresses. And this Salina is in the Texoma's USL territory. So if they were going to put another USL One team there, it would break their territory rule and they would have to pay a bunch of money to Sherman, to Texoma. And I don't know that would be happening. So officially everyone involved is going to tell you that it's not a moving, seems not moving. Unofficially, we're guessing that they actually are, but I can't.
Have you spoken to anybody at Texoma? Like, have you contacted them and said, hey, what's going on?
I reached out to the owner and he has not called me back. Other people have reached out and been told they're not moving. So, you know, and the people that have responded from Salina have said it's a new team, but the way everything works says to us, they're moving, you know, but we're not reporting squat. We're just conjecturing based on the factors. So, you know, your mileage may vary. They did put up a thing. There was a portal that listed taking season ticket deposits for this new team in Salina. And they put out a survey to ask about people naming it and things like that. So
could it be a USL 2 team? Would that violate anything?
That would not, but the ticket deposit website was labeled, says clearly USL One. It says it's USL One on there in Salina. It just doesn't have a name.
So does this have, I'm just totally guessing here because I only know bits and pieces of the story. Does this have anything to do with the guy they fired?
I have no idea. I mean, your guess is as good as mine, Peter. I don't know. You know, yeah. He's not.
For those who don't know, the guy that was he the chairman or president of the club of
he's
Texoma?
He's one of the owners and he was CEO.
And he got pushed out.
He got fired as CEO.
Right.
I'm sure when I asked about ownership, I was told that there's legal things, so which is understandable.
Right.
So
yeah,
one of the
sure.
other, there's a family whose name I can't remember at the second, who's one of the other ownership, part of the ownership group. And one of their people, sort of like the Neils with the Trinity, one of their sons is now the acting CEO. And I'm sorry, I don't have his name in front of me, but you know, they did fill that role. So I could not tell you whether this is actually Texoma moving or not.
Yeah,
I cannot tell you whether it has to do with that other guy or not. I just know, like, sort of reading of the tea leaves, I'm sort of guessing that that is what's actually happening, but they're denying that that's what's happening. So
right.
Your mileage will vary about whether you think Texoma's surviving or not.
Can I wildly speculate?
Yeah, it's a podcast, sure.
No, yeah. Dan, you love it when I wildly speculate.
Oh, yeah.
You?
That's the best part.
So this is a contentious breakup, and the guy that's been shoved out believes he owns some legal right to this territory, and he said, F it, I'm just going to start my own team. You guys stop me.
Wow.
It didn't come across like every other USL team announcement, because USL gets out in front of stuff. They set a whole, you know, guide for teams to follow.
I think a very unhappy business person has gone rogue. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, as well, the registered address thing, that's a courthouse. I mean, it's not like, you know, with the Hunts, it's that Elm Street address in Dallas where it's Hunt Sports Group. But yeah, it's a courthouse. So, you know, Simon was the registered agent, I think still is, on the management group for Texoma FC at that place. So if you wanted to file a new group, yeah, do it in the same place.
Yeah, it's fascinating. The stadiums, they'll be playing at this new team, or same team, whatever, Salina High School. It's 28 miles from where they are now. So like, it's definitely like in the same area, it's the same territory, you know? So it's a complicated, if it's a new team, man, USL will be heavily involved in that argument or decision.
But there's no way USL could ever possibly allow a team just to move into a territory they've already sold to somebody. So unless the new team means the team in Sherman is folding.
Well, they could buy space. They could pay Texoma. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, this I 100% know for sure because I asked Atletico Dallas. Atletico Dallas owns everything in USL terms from Highway 380 and down. So if any USL One, USL Championship, USL Premier, whatever, if they tried to come into on the men's side, tried to come into anywhere in Dallas south of 380, they would have to pay Atletico to get permission to do it, and Atletico can just blankly say no. But you know, money talks. This is USL.
That's not very
USL
pro-rel
team.
Of them.
No, it's not. But this
That's
is
not
how
very open
franchise
system.
Territories are different than
right
than pro-rel. So, like, you know, what's actually happening in Texoma is officially a mystery. We all have our guesses as to what's happening. You know, I'm sure they're not going to be super happy that they have five games left or whatever, and that's what people are talking about. They have two or three home games left, so they're going to be mad about that. But
you know who might be a big winner out of all of this? Salina High School is 16 miles straight down Preston Road from Toyota Soccer Center. Now, if you were looking for someone to play USL League One soccer on loan because they're a little bit above MLS Next Pro but not quite ready for USL Championship, they can still train at Toyota Soccer Center with FC Dallas.
Yeah.
Get in their car for 20 minutes and be ready for a game.
Could be a nice development for the big team. Yeah, for sure.
All right. That's a lot of talking about that. Sorry.
It's late in the pot. It's all right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And speaking of Atletico, I am just personally from a marketing and business and all of this kind of like brand building exercise, I have been interested in their efforts to try to keep themselves out in front of everybody's, you know, on everybody's radar. the little events they've been trying to pull off with the you know, the soccer stuff, the videos, et cetera, et cetera. The pre-launch kit, all that. That's all been great. And then today I saw on Instagram, they're going to announce, is this a player, a coach, an owner?
Well, their tease just says the Atletico family grows, and it could be
somebody's
one of these,
pregnant.
Well, that's not a very likely suggestion. So it could be a new minority owner. It could be one of these new, from Glory from Dust programs they've been doing, where they have a local sort of artist that's like a thing, like your record shop eater and your things that they've done. You know, so we're not really sure. We're going to find out. It's on Tuesday, this announcement. So we'll see if they can drum up some
buzz.
Got me
to talk about it.
Yeah. Here we are. You know, I'm curious. I mean, I almost wish it was one day earlier so we would have to talk about, but
we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, next week, if it turns out to be something we find really interesting, we'll talk about it. So
there is a real big news from them. Just after we recorded last week, they posted a job for a sports turf manager to manage MoneyGram.
Well, they should call Ben Bauer, who used to be part of the grounds crew at MoneyGram. He's also the guy that owns Crossbar and Dallas Soccer Alliance. He's got a background in that kind of stuff. I think that's what his college degree is in, actually.
In agronomy. Agronomy?
Yeah.
Agronomy.
That's it. Yeah.
Agronomy.
Aggressive something.
I think that's it. Yeah. If it's not, it should be. That sounds way better and cooler. All right. So go Atletico Dallas. Let's see. And we've got local amateur teams lining up for the U.S. Open Cup coming this weekend.
Yeah, on Sunday, the 14th, support local soccer. Denton Diablos through their second team, which is in the Metroplex Premier League, and they play Sporting North Texas.
Was there already a round?
Nope. This is round one of Open Cup qualifying.
Okay.
There's a couple of teams that are local that have a bye, but just by random luck of the draw. And the other game is 4-0. Through their UPSL team versus the very confusing Dallas Atletico.
Not Atletico Dallas.
Not Atletico Dallas. Dallas Atletico.
The original one.
The original Dallas Atletico for the Metroplex Premier League. So go out and support your local, high-level amateur side.
Do we know where they're playing these games?
Yes. I have an article on it on the website. I can tell you real quick. The 4-0 Dallas Atletico game is at Bishop Lynch. These are on the 14th, by the way. I believe it's Sunday. That game's at 7. Bishop Lynch, 4-0 versus Dallas Atletico. Denton versus Sporting is at 5:15. This is the one you complain. It was at a weird time. Is it Alliance Park Field 2 over in Fort Worth? Denton Diablos versus Sporting.
Okay.
The list of players that 4-0 has picked up this time is pretty impressive.
Yeah. They got a whole bunch of FC Dallas alum, Academy alums, guys that have been kicking around the pro.
I got Victoria Yoa.
Yeah.
Oh, is Victor playing for them?
Yeah,
and Moises. David Teixeira, Emmanuel Almaguer,
Michelle, the manager.
Rios there.
No, he couldn't.
No,
do
he's
that
not
two
involved
years
anymore.
Well, I know. I didn't know. Maybe he picked back up. I mean, you know, Victor
no,
wasn't.
It's Mike Ambrose now.
Former FC Dallas Michael Ambrose is their coach now.
His brother, Matt Ambrose, is on my Tuesday night over 40 team.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rio Ramirez.
Pollo
Lopez, yeah. The keeper came out of the academy, plays for Sidekicks and stuff like that.
Wow.
Eminol is mentioned. Yeah. A whole bunch of FCS guys.
Speaking of Sidekicks, is there any indoor soccer happening in DFW this year? Did both those teams fold?
Unofficially, yes. Officially, no. Somebody reported that they were both folding, and MSL threw a fit and threatened legal action for inaccurate reporting. But
when does that season supposed to start? Do we know?
In December, I believe.
Oh, okay.
When it
so
starts.
There's a bit of time
so
left.
Theoretically,
okay.
There's time, but like everyone I know is like, yeah, it's over. So, you know. All their players are signing with other teams. They don't have any players. They don't have any coaches. They don't have any front office people. Like, I don't know who thinks. All I can think of is that the league is holding on to them on the hope that somebody will come swooping in and pick up the franchises or something. But it's like, I don't see it happening.
Be awesome if somebody took it and worked out a deal to play at the Fair Park Convention Center. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
With the Dallas Dallas Ice used to play or whatever.
Yeah, if someone's into that, give Man Mail a call. They probably will give it to you relatively cheap.
Would you go to Fair Park on any given night or weekend day or whatever to go watch indoor soccer at the Fair Park Coliseum? No, I would not. Huh?
No, I would not.
No. Okay. Maybe my ownership plans are being crushed right here on the podcast.
It has nothing to do with Fair Park. It has to do with indoor soccer.
Oh, are you an anti indoor soccer guy?
I am not anti indoor soccer when it was the highest level play in the United States. But now that it's like the equivalent to the fifth tier semi pro, I don't care. I've been to a couple of games. You know, it's like the guys that play that are guys that can't catch on in USL 1. You know, they play NPSL or they play UPSL. It's just not. It's fourth, fifth tier.
Okay. You are such a soccer snob.
It's not that. It's like I got 19 pro teams to cover now. Yeah.
That's true. We have too much soccer.
It's not worth my time.
We do have too much soccer.
I can barely get USL 1 and next pro in, let alone, you know, squeezing in some academy here and there. Third Degree the Podcast is brought to you by our wonderful listeners who support us on Patreon, patreon.com/thirddegree. If you like what we do on the web, if you like what we do on this podcast, let's be honest, if you're here listening when FC Dallas didn't even have a game, then you're our audience. You're the people that make this thing work. And without you guys, this podcast and this website probably wouldn't even exist. So thank you for your support. Why not join us at patreon.com? And we'll see you again next week.
All right. Very good. Look at us sneaking under the hour again. Dan, it's good to see you, my friend.
Likewise.
Go take a nap.
I need to go back to work, though.
Okay. Go do that, too. Buzz?
Hey, thanks for both of y'all being here, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. It's always fun to talk a little burn soccer. Dallas area soccer. With you, Buzz.
So curious.
But also burn.
For sure. All right. And thank you, DFW soccer area curious people. We will speak to you next week on another episode of Third Degree the Podcast.
Stay curious.
Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast. Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast. Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast. Third Degree, the Third Degree Net Podcast.